Genesis 26 and picking up in verse 12, and we are going through the extended life of Abraham, and now son Isaac. We are in his segment of the story, picking up in verse 12, and it begins, "Then Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year a hundredfold, and the Lord blessed him. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him." Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father, and they had filled them with earth. And Abimelech said to Isaac, "Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we." And then Isaac departed from there, and he pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father, for the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. Also Isaac's servants dug in the valley, found a well of running water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, "The water's ours." So he called the name of the well Esek, because they quarreled with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also. So he called its name Sitnah. And he moved from there and dug another well. But they did not quarrel over it. So he called its name Rehoboth, because he said, "For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land." So we'll stop there for just a minute. Now, if you were here last week when we were going through the life of Isaac and how he repeated his father's errors, going into Egypt, even though he was just at the border of Egypt, and claiming that his wife was also his sister, the way his dad did in order to protect himself again. So the sins of the father visited the son in this case. But I want you to notice that despite his shortcomings, despite the failures of Isaac here, it says that he was still under God's blessing. He was still under God's blessing because his heart was still God-centered. Because his heart was God-centered, God continued to bless him even because of his shortcomings. And that's something we need to learn. Oftentimes we think we have to be some sort of perfecting status or stature for God to bless us. God blessed him in a way that was really an unspoken testimony of God, of God's love, of God's commitment, of God's power and involvement in Isaac's life. He blessed him in many ways, and it showed even without Isaac's verbal testimony. Why do I bring that up? Because that's what our testimony should be. God longs to bless us if we are willing to keep a heart after him. Again, even if we fall, even if we stumble, fall short, if our heart is towards him, he'll bless us. And that blessing, now again, I'm not talking about riches. I'm not talking about fame and comfort. I'm talking about something that is intangible. You'll know it when you see it. But it's an intangible blessing that speaks to the people around us, to all those that we have contact with. There's a Christian. That person's different. It wasn't long before the people there could see that God's hand was on Isaac as much as they could see that God's hand was on Abraham before him. So despite the hardship of the day, remember, there was a famine going on in the land at that time. That's what drove Isaac down to Gerar, and he was heading towards Egypt. He was going all the way, just like Dad did. Now I want you to notice that despite the hardship, despite the famine that was going on at that time, despite the persecution from the Philistines, other people were persecuting him. Despite all these things, Isaac was still abundantly cared for. And we can look at the economy that's going on now. We can look at looks like troubling times, right? I mean, I pick up section in the newspaper, and it's just always, you know, tens of thousands. You know, being laid off, it's being laid off. What is it? Citicorp laying off, what, 20% of their... It was like tens of thousands that they were laying off. Their entire employees. You know, you look at that and it's like, man, that's getting kind of scary. Is your heart after the Lord? I'm not telling you won't lose your job. I'm not telling you there won't be hard times. But I tell you one thing, I'd rather go through any hard time with God beside me and square with a house than ever trying to do it on our own. Isaac had a heart towards God, and God took care of him, even through the persecution, even through the famine. Isaac, I think, was God's early manifest of the words, you know, faithfulness in the small things. You know how the verse goes. For faithful in the small things, God entrusts us with the large. Isaac was faithful in the small things. He did what God said. Even though he failed, he got back up. He fell short, he got back up. And he ended up being very faithful in God, and God blessed him in it, and he began to trust him with more. God's not going to snap the fingers. I shouldn't say he's not going to do this. Probably he's not going to snap your fingers and let you win the lottery. If you win the lottery, you come tell me. I'll eat those words, okay? Tzar, you must be faithful in those small things. He's going to say, I need you to do this, and you're going to do it. You're going to step forward. Okay, I want you to do this now, and you're going to step forward a little further. And each time you step forward, each time you're consistent, each time you're faithful in what he's already asked you to do, he will give you more. Most of the time, we want to skip the middle. We want to jump right to the edge. Now, for the past couple days, I've been up in Superior with Sharon, and I got some chance to spend some time with the Superior gang, who I'm sure are listening to us tonight. They always do. Wednesday nights, they always tune in and join us up there. And in that discussion, that was really the thrust of the discussion. I mean, that's hard business planting a church. It's hard business starting from scratch. I've said it many times. I don't want to do it again. But the thing that we discussed was the fact that they must be faithful in that which God has put on their plate. They must be faithful in the small things. To be busy about ministry. Forget about starting a church. Busy yourself about ministry. That's what it's about. That's what God wants us to do. And so Isaac was. He was faithful in what God's called him to do. And because he was faithful, God trusted him with larger things. He became, even in the worldly sense, a very rich man. You know, that little truth, that faithfulness in the small things, I have seen people spend a lifetime trying to come to the understanding of that concept. Why won't God make me a pastor? Why won't God give me a church? I want to be an elder. Can I teach? Can I go into the jail? Well, how about if you just get these little issues in your life straightened out? Oh, no, that's boring. That's a drag. God is saying these are the issues. Trust me, God's not going to put you in those areas of responsibility unless you are ready for that responsibility. People say, you know, I'm ready to teach. Are you hearing the teaching that's coming to you? I'm ready to counsel. Are you hearing the counsel that's coming to you? Because no one will ever be a leader unless they learn to be a follower. We need to be faithful in these small things in our lives. Isaac could have fought for those wells, you know that? He dug those wells. Those were Abraham's wells. Therefore, they were his wells. And he had a deal with Abimelech. These wells, on multiple fronts, these were his. He could have fought for them. Could have got geared up his guys and just went out, and he could have took those wells back. They were rightfully his after all. He could have insisted on his rights in this manner. But I want you to notice that he didn't. He didn't do that at all, did he? He did something that's very hard for all of us, and I speak firsthand on this. He allowed God to fight for him. He allowed God to take care of these issues. And he, doing that, allowing God to fight for him, I want you to notice that the Lord brought him into a broad place. A broad place. If you're a student of the Word, you know that that term shows up in one way or another several times through Scripture, doesn't it? It's a common theme. A broad or wide place, meaning a place of blessing, a place of safety, a place of rest. Psalms 18:19 says, He also brought me out into a broad place. He delivered me because He delighted in me. Does God delight in you? Isn't that a heavy thing? I mean, to read that, it's like, does God delight in me? Wow, that's something. Psalms 31:8 says, And have not shut me up into the hand of the enemy, you have set my feet in a wide place. It's a theme in the Bible. That's where Isaac found himself. In that broad place, that wide place, that place of rest. For now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. I think God longs for all of us to be in that place. It saddens me as a pastor to see so often how people will choose rather to live in that very narrow place, that place of danger, that place of restriction, confined to a world that's inconsistent, close to sin, tent facing Sodom, living on the edge of Egypt. If you've been here through this, you know what I'm talking about. That's that narrow place of being bound. And you can feel it too. I mean, you know people who claim to be Christians, but they're always sad. Always so serious. So withdrawn and closed, and just kind of walk around like a monkey on their back all the time. It's like, wow, sure makes me want to be a Christian. And nothing in their life says they're living in that place of rest, that broad place of God's blessing, where it's seek first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added to you. And then there's the people that's just like, dude, do you have any problems whatsoever? I mean, you look like everything's always just so great in your life. And it's not. It's a person who rolls with it. It's a person who lives in that broad place. It's a place of blessing. It isn't something you snap your fingers. He had to be obedient. He let God fight the battles for him. It's like, you know what? I can't change that in my life. I surrender. God, this is yours. You deal with this. I'm just your servant. I'm going to stand over here and this is your thing. I'm going to go on now. Can't deal with this. You deal with this, Lord. I'm going to go on and serve you. I'm going to go on and be your disciple now. I'm going to go on and do the things that you've called me to do and stop copping a plea somehow that this issue in my life is keeping me from it. It's yours now, God. That's moving into the broad place. How much do you trust the Lord tonight? How much do you love Him? How much do you believe He's got your back? Verse 23, going on the text, he says, then he went up from there to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared to him the same night, and he said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake. So he built an altar there, and he called on the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. God was faithful, wasn't he? God's always faithful, gang. He promised the son here exactly what he promised the father. And in response, Isaac did what his father did. What was that? He built an altar and he worshiped the Lord. In response. Why do you worship the Lord tonight? Do you want something? Are you trying to get God on your side? Are you, hey God, I got this thing going over here. Would you bless this thing? I didn't give you that thing. I didn't tell you to go there. Yeah, but I got it going there. Here, can you help me over here? No. My way's over here. How many of us do that? We need to be worshiping the Lord, saying, Lord, thy will be done in my life. What do you want me to do, Lord? And again, we get back to that thing of whether we trust the Lord. How much do you trust the Lord? Do you trust the Lord that He has a plan and a love for you and a will for you that far outstrips anything that you could imagine for your own life? I really believed I had a plan for my life. I knew what I wanted to do. I was set, man. I had planned it. I had schemed it. I had saved for it. We was ready. I'm going to go to a college, small college town. I'm going to open up a delicatessen coffee shop. And I'm going to, you know, do this for college students. And this is what I'm going to do with my life. Yes, sir. Wrong. Wrong, 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 wrong. That wasn't God's plan for me at all. And there came a time of testing. How much do you love me, Tim? Will you walk away from this? What will I do, Lord? Will you walk away from this? What will you do for me, Lord? Will you walk away from this? Hey, Lord, are you listening to me? Tim, will you walk away from this? Do you ever have conversations like that with God? Just answer the question, Tim. Question is how much do you trust Him? Many of us keep saying He's Lord of our lives, but we treat Him anything but that. He called here upon not just the name of God, but I want you to notice the exact language. He called upon His Lord. When he worshipped, it wasn't just God Creator, but Lord. Lord of my life. And you know what? There's a big difference tonight about that. And you know it. If you go to church here at all, you know we drive home that point on a regular basis. There's a big difference between knowing God and knowing your Lord. I think plenty of folks will acknowledge God. I think the vast majority of the people on the street that you would run into would acknowledge God. But that's going to fall vastly short of acknowledging that He is Lord of their lives. Lord entails servanthood, slavery even. I'm in bondage to this. He's the man. He's the master. How many times in our prayer we go, "Oh no, Lord." And let me tell you something. Those two words do not go together. No, Lord. No, Lord, in that day would cost you your life. It's always, "Yes, Lord." How far, Lord? How much, Lord? Where do you want me to go, Lord? That's a big difference when most of the church today is in this God thing for what they can get out of it. Not for what they can give to it. They're looking for comfort. They're looking for stability. You know, make my life calm and, you know, make it comfortable and make my family kind of all work and make my kids be good kids and give me enough money to keep food on the table. It's all in like God's their safety net instead of the Lord of their lives. That dynamic apostolic mentality where you go before the Lord and say, "What do you want me to do, Lord?" And being obedient to that. Few and far. And you look in the Bible and you see those who are willing to live their lives like that, they had a vastly different life than those who lived the contrary. Looking to add a little Jesus or looking for Jesus to bless what they had going. Apparently Isaac here spent a significant amount of time pursuing the path that he saw as right. He stayed after it. Proverbs 16:25 says, "There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death." It's a way that seems right to a man. Somewhere along the way, Isaac, and it must have happened there in Gerar, Isaac decided he was going to go God's way and not his way. And from that day, from Gerar, what did he do? He returned to the life of the altar. The life of worship. He returned to the life of prayer. A life where he bowed before his God. And because he did, everything began to change around him. His relationship around him, all those relationships began to change. Now, seemingly, he was ready to lead again. Took him a while. God found him back at the altar. And things began to change. Verse 26 says, "Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Pichol, the commander of his army. Isaac said to them, 'Why have you come to me since you hate me and you sent me away from you?' But they said, 'We have certainly seen that the Lord is with you.' So we said, 'Let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you that you will do us no harm, since I've touched you. And since we've done nothing to you but good, and we sent you away in peace, you are now blessed of the Lord.' So he made them a feast. They ate and drank. They rose early in the morning and swore an oath with one another. And Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace." Now here are these guys. Finally, God had blessed Isaac so much that they began to fear him. And so they come and they go, hey, dude, let's just, you know, cut a deal here. We won't come at you, and if you don't come at us, and we won't hurt you if you don't hurt us. And obviously they were a little bit more concerned about Isaac and his gang hurting them. You know, it's been said that the best way to win over your enemies is to outlast them. I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's been a long time. This few verses here, you need to understand, a long period of time, many, many years, no doubt, had stretched between the first part of this story and the latter half of this story. A long time, but Isaac's day now had come. Isaac had left Gerar at the direction of Abimelech here. But now it was Abimelech and the boys who had come to him looking for a peace agreement. Now, it wasn't because suddenly Abimelech decided that he liked Isaac. You know, he's not such a bad guy. Let's go see if we can make peace. That wasn't it at all. It's because he saw the hand of God upon Isaac's life. Fruit from his life. Abimelech saw from afar that God's hand was upon Isaac. Now just stop for a minute and think about that. It wasn't like they worked together. They weren't across from each other in the line at work. He saw from afar. How far away can people see that you're a Christian? You say, well, I got one of them fish in my car, so they can see from the car behind me. And it doesn't mean anything. How far away can they tell you're a Christian? Because I think people can tell a person who has Christ overflowing from their life. I mean, if you're ever like totally broke and you want to go out on a date and just have a fun time, go out and see if you can play the game Spot the Christian. Okay, if you're really daring, you go ask them. But just go out to a coffee shop, you know. Airports used to be really cool when you could go walk around airports. And now you can't get in no more. But, you know, you could go walk around airports. And I love watching all the foreign people come around. Spot the Christian. See in a crowd and go, now, that guy, he's a Christian. And then go ask him, hey, are you a Christian then? And see how many you get right. I think you can tell. Isaac was spotted by Abimelech from afar here. It was the fruit of Isaac's life. And it took a long time, as we said, but justice had come. Proverbs 16:7 says, when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. That's amazing. And notice again, he did not fight for his rights. He didn't attempt for vindication. He didn't say, look, I'll cut a deal with you, dude. You've been in my face for years, you know, way back when you stopped up my wells. Don't be telling me you want to cut a deal with me. I mean, he didn't try to fight for his vindication at all. He knew, as we've already mentioned, he knew that God had his back. He didn't have to protect himself. He trusted in his Lord to make things right. Our victory in life, guys, comes from yielding to God. Let me say that again. Our victory in life comes through yielding to God. The more you let God have His way in your life, the greater victory, the greater peace, the greater security, the broad way. Some people manage to do it a little bit, and they have a little bit of that victory. Some people have figured it out. Oh, hey, wait a minute here. It's like Pavlov's dog, you know. I just keep pushing this button. God, just give it to God, give it to God, give it to God. Hey, this is good. And you're emptying your pockets of everything you might be holding back from God. You're giving it all up to God because this is a really good thing going on. It doesn't happen overnight. I think our commitment in our lives to give to God is we give it slowly, don't we? It's a growing aspect. I encourage you to not take a lifetime, because those that have found their way to that place, they know joy and they know peace like nobody else on this earth. And we know it's true, don't we? It's not that we don't know the truth. We're just reluctant to give up what we see is the security of the world. I got this little one here in my pocket. I'll give it up. Okay. What's in your sock? Okay. You got a little bit done. There you go. We hold on all the time because we're afraid, aren't we? What's the Bible say about fear? Perfect love casts out all fear. See, I think one of the best things, and you're going to think this is strange for a pastor to say, I think one of the best things for you to begin to think in your life, guys, this isn't really real. We're just passing through this world. We hold this in such high thing. Oh, life, man, I got to get all I can get. Dude, this isn't even real. We're going to pass through here. We're gone. The real thing's on the other side. And then you put your life in that way, it's just like, you know, I've shared this before. You ever be in a dream when you suddenly realized, hey, this is a dream? And for a little bit, you can hold on to that and you can do some crazy stuff because it's a dream and you know it's a dream. Welcome to the big dream, gang. We're just passing through. How many of us really believe that? That we're willing to give up our lives and say, you know what? For this short period of time I'm on this planet, it's all yours, God. We'll deal with all the stuff afterwards. When I get to heaven, we got eternity. While I'm here, it's all yours, God. And what's the Bible say about that? That you're such a great guy for doing that? No, it says, it's just your reasonable service. It's just your reasonable service. Our victory, guys, comes with yielding to God. And those who harden their hearts, those who bury their feet, ultimately they're going to deprive themselves of this kind of Isaac blessing here. Discovering God's plan. God's great blessing for them. Romans 8:28, all things work for good. Do you believe that today? Isaac here had to deal with Abimelech. And he dealt with him as we are told we are to deal with those outside of the fold. And how is that? Well, we're not to be aloof from the world on one side, and we're not to kind of get this holier-than-thou attitude. But we know we're also not supposed to live amongst them in some sort of, you know, strange backdoor, you know, we're behind you kind of effort to bring them to Christ either. Some of us tend to go out there and, oh, I'm going to win them to Christ. I'm going to go out and, you know, party with them and join with their jokes and join in their media and everything else the world has to offer. And then some of us are like, oh, no, I don't even talk to you. So I'm over here. You're over there. I don't have anything to do with you. I don't read newspapers. I don't go to movies. I don't do any of that stuff. I'm separate from you. Well, how can you reach anybody with that kind of attitude? But how can you expect to be separate when you're with them in that kind of commitment? How did Isaac do this? I mean, I think he can be a role model here for us. We indeed are called to live separate lives, heart, mind, spirit. But we're also called to love them in grace. We are to be in the world, but not of the world. Isaac didn't turn them away. Come on, and let's talk. And he dealt with them. I doubt if Abimelech was like his best bud. They probably didn't go bowling on Fridays after this. But he was square with him. He was fair with him. They dealt with it. He didn't say, I ain't talking to you. You're a heathen. Get out of my house. Most people who do that, it really comes down to the fact that they're afraid. Probably afraid of their own hearts. And I think we should be to some degree. But it must be extremely weak if you feel like you can't have any contact with the world or somehow you're going to be tainted. I think God's blood is a little thicker than that, gang. When He does a work, He does a work. Verse 32, it says, and it came to pass the same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug, and said to him, we have found water. So he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. So because of Isaac's obedience because of his patience. There it is again. That nasty word that keeps coming up every time we deal with God. Patience. Because of his patience and patient obedience, God blessed him. And as often is the case, gang, God did it in such a way that Isaac absolutely knew that what had happened was not just happenstance, but it was God. Now, if you've walked with Christ for any amount of time, if you put yourself out there, you know what I mean? Out there. Step out there. Be in faith. You know? It's kind of scary. And you step out, you do something, and God moves and does something really, really freaky. You know what I'm saying? You guys have had those things happen. And you go, oh, that's so God. And at that moment, aren't those moments beautiful? It's like he's so close. You can just reach out and touch him when he does stuff like that. It's like, oh, that was so cool. It's like, good move, God. And you're just so close at that moment. Now, I warn you. You start doing that and start getting a little buzz from that, you can get really, really addicted to seeing God's will done in your life. You're like, that was cool. Let's do it again. I live for it. Those moments when God does those things around me, it's like, oh, that. Yeah. Come on now. Don't touch the pulpit. Those moments, you know, when you go, oh, God, that's so good. Do that again in my life. You live for it. It's an incredible thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, oh, you're missing a great part of Christ. A great part of Christianity. I mean, unless you can say, man, I remember this time, this happened, and then God did that. And people, even the Christians around you go, oh, whoa, that's so God. That's right. Put yourself out there. Put yourself back, as I often say to my leadership, it's back on your heels. Where, you know, there's no balance. You're not on your own. It's a total God thing. You have to put yourself in that realm to see God move in that way. So God moved here in Isaac and he knew. It's like the very day he was obedient to God, the very day he did the right thing, they strike water. Same day. So God blessing Isaac as he blessed his father. Last two verses here. When Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beri, the Hittite, and Basmath, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite. Basmath. There's a name for you. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. When Isaac became a man, or Esau became a man, excuse me, we see here and elsewhere that Esau now began to make decisions for himself as God designed for maturity and for adulthood. Now, it's sad. I wish I could tell you that whenever we make such decisions that we're going to make good and godly decisions. That we would make always the decisions that God would have us make. But that's not true and we know it. Sometimes we make wrong decisions. And that's part of growing up in God and learning to hear His voice. The longer you walk with God, the longer you're obedient to Him, the better you can hear His voice. Now, is not that a fact? It's like, okay, I understand that, what you're telling me. But at first, it's hard to hear His voice. It's hard to know. It comes with growing and maturing and using and listening, hearing, moving in that voice. Esau's parents here did not or could not apparently force Esau to stand down on this matter. Now, we know very well from Scripture and from history that Isaac and Rebekah were godly parents. There's no doubt about that. But it's clear that they did not have control over Esau that they had when he was a child. once he became a man, he, like all of us here tonight, had to learn to hear God's voice. He had to learn to hear God's voice, or he had to begin to refuse to listen to that voice. Because free will is mandatory to each one of us as adult believers. You cannot take free will out of the description of Christianity, and how many times we see that being tried against us. You cannot reinvent Christianity or the dynamics of Christianity, the innate parts of Christianity. And one of those innate parts of Christianity is free will. You cannot be a Christian without free will. God himself gave us this freedom to choose, didn't he? And yes, he even gave us the ability to choose wrong, the ability to choose to sin. He gave us free will. He gave us that choice. Anyone who would attempt to, by force, to take away that personal relationship we have with God is placing themselves in the Godhead position. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter what position they're in. Anyone who tries to take away free will from an adult Christian is placing themselves in the Godhead position. They are reinventing Christianity in their own image. They are taking away the innate way God made Christianity. In this story, this was Esau and his parents. And let me tell you something. If we allow our parents to guide us as adults, instead of learning to seek the voice of God ourselves, let me ask you a very interesting question. If you allow that, what's going to happen to the next generation? You say, what do you mean? What will happen if we ride roughshod over our adult children? They never learn to hear God's voice with any kind of acting because they are always listening to our voice. So when they become parents, who's going to lead them? Uh-oh. There's a problem, isn't there? You bet there's a problem. They only know your voice, parents. They don't know God's voice. They never learn to hear God's voice. So now when they have kids, they're supposed to be the voice now, except they don't know how to lead those kids because they only know your voice. And you got problems. What should we be doing? Teaching our children to hear the voice of God. To have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You say, yes, Pastor, but that's scary. Yes, it is. I don't even have any kids. I can see that from afar. You bet it's scary. Did they not explain that to you before you had kids? You should read up on that a little bit before you jump into the pool. Because the way I'm looking at it from afar, and again, I'm just an observer here. But from what I'm seeing from afar, the whole parent thing looks scary to me. I mean, from the beginning to the end. I mean, just about the time you get past it, you know, this scary part, oh no. Then you got a new scary part, oh no. And then God help you, they turn 16. Lock them in their rooms. No, you can't do that. No, I mean what I'm saying. The whole thing is scary. You can't take out the fear of this. And in essence, by our rough shot over our children in that realm, you know what you're saying? I don't trust you, Lord. I got it, Lord. I'll deal with this. I love them more than you do, Lord. I'll take care of this, Lord. No, you won't, and no, you don't. He'll take care of it, and he loves them more than you. He died upon a cross to save your child's soul, and you can't save that child. Only Christ can. If we don't allow our children to learn to hear the voice of God, in essence, in one generation away, you've got the blind leading the blind. Esau, as an adult, had to figure this out on his own. Now, it didn't mean that Esau's parents didn't have good counsel. It doesn't say that Esau, you know, that he was oh so wise here by not listening to his parents. But he had to choose who he was going to listen to God or to his own desires. It says his parents were grieved. They were grieved. But there's no record here that they tried to force their son to do what they wanted him to do. I'm not talking about little children here. I'm talking about adult children here. Now, let me tell you something. This isn't the only passage in Scripture. I'm not leaning heavily or building an entire doctrine out of one passage. There are several instances here. Now, you don't need to turn there for the sake of time. You can make a note here. I'm going to read to you Judges 14, beginning in verse 2. Judges 14, verse 2. This is about Samson. Listen to what this says here. When he returned home, Samson, he told his father and mother, "I want to marry a young Philistine woman I saw in Timnah." And his father and mother objected strenuously. "Isn't there one woman in our tribe or among all the Israelites you could marry? Why must you go to the pagan Philistines to find a wife?" But Samson told his father, "Get her for me. She's the one I want." She's the one I want. Okay? So he said, "Oh, I want her." And listen to this. He goes on. His father and mother didn't realize that the Lord was at work in all of this, creating an opportunity to disrupt the Philistines who ruled over Israel at that time. What? Yeah, they meant good. They meant the right thing. "Oh, son, don't go marrying a Philistine woman." What's it say again? I'm sorry. It says, father and mother didn't realize that the Lord was at work. I wonder how many of us are in that same situation. You say, okay. You can cite a couple examples. But I know what my Lord said. Do you know what the Lord said? The Lord said in Mark chapter 3, he says, "Who's my mother and who's my brother?" Because mom and the boys came after Jesus because they thought he's kind of cracking up. He thinks he's the Messiah. We got to come and take him home. He needs some rest. A little hospitalization, some medication maybe. He thinks he's the Messiah. And what did Jesus say? "I ain't going." I'm sorry? I said, "I'm not going. These guys here, this is my family." And Jesus refused his parents because he had a calling from God. Jesus Christ. I don't know how much license we need. The Bible tells us not to be children in our thinking, but to be mature in our understanding. That's 1 Corinthians 14:30. Not to be children, we are to be mature in our understanding. So God's calling us to grow up, to be mature, to make mature decisions. Well, when then? I don't know if I have that number. In the traditional Jewish system, it says that a boy becomes an adult man at 13. Now, I'm not emancipating you 16-year-olds. Sorry. You say, "Well, how old?" Well, the law says 18. What's the Bible say about that? It says, "Obey the laws of the land." Well, so what am I saying? I'm saying 18. Because I can't get out of that obey the laws of the land verse. Now, many folks are going to go back into the Old Testament. They're going to be in passages such as Proverbs 22:6. It says, "Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." Well, let me tell you something. Look up the word there. The child there means boy, lad, and youth. Your adult children are not children. They're adults. How often we fail because we won't allow our children to grow up and make the decisions God's calling to make upon their lives. Now, certainly, You can go back into the Old Testament. You can get in there deep and you can graze on bits and pieces of traditional Jewish living, Jewish law, Jewish culture. But let me tell you something today. I'm not a Jew. It's not 4,000 BC. And Jesus died to set me free from all of that. Strike one, strike two, strike three. I don't know how many reasons we want today. And certainly, it's embarrassing when I see people in the new Judaism going on within the modern church today. This is an idea where I go back into the Old Testament and I begin to snack on pieces of the Jewish way. Just piece here, piece there. I'm sorry, you don't get to do that. It's you eat it all or you don't go at all. So unless you're ready to adopt all the ways of the Old Testament, all you do is embarrass the name of Jesus Christ, because apparently Jesus didn't die quite enough to save you all the way. But my friends, Jesus did die enough to save you all the way. You can't snack on pieces of Old Testament Jewish culture. It only makes you into a hypocrite. And it's very frustrating, because you know what happens? Maybe a little bit more. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe a little bit more. Oh, you know, I can't eat pork. You know, that's Jewish. Oh, bottom feeding fish. You know, let me tell you something. That's a slippery slope, my friends. You go down that road, you go all the way. I'm saved. Jesus died to save me. I'm a Gentile. I'm not a Jew. I have a Messiah who died upon the cross, and he set me, what's the word? Free. Free. Did Esau do good here? No, he did not. Did his parents stop him? No, they did not. It's hard being a parent. I mean, I don't even have any kids, and I can see that. Any of you who do it and do it well, I admire you to the nth degree. I'm amazed. Especially today. It's hard out there. But the way I look at it is there's no magic wand. Oh, if I homeschool my kids, then nothing will happen to them. Oh, they'll be okay if I homeschool them. Shall I start naming names? Are people out there absolutely raising hell that were homeschooled that I know? And shall I name some names in here of some very, very fine young people that go to this church today that are public school kids? And gee, you're not out there, you know, fooling around behind the bleachers and smoking dope and, you know, and being a juvenile delinquent. What's the key? Loving them, praying for them, bringing them to the church, house devotions, being a good example, being the way you'd like them to be. Because I don't know about you, I'm an old man, I can still remember back that far. And you can cram it down my throat all you want. It isn't going to make any difference to me. I need to see Jesus and see Him real. And I think so do your youth. So you say, well, you don't have any right. You don't have any kids. Maybe so. Some of you may think that. Usually when I bring up anything to do with children, there's always those who are criticizing me. But I do own a Bible. I know what the Bible says. And I was a kid once. It was a long time ago, I know. But I remember. I went to public school. I made a lot of choices. I made a lot of wrong choices. But I was given a lot of freedom. And here I stand. Behind a pulpit. I wasn't homeschooled. I had nothing against homeschooled. Frankly, if I had a kid, there is no way my kid's going to public school. But that's just me. There's no magic wand. Except maybe prayer. Any of you guys that have kids, I again, be prayerful. It's tough from where I see. All in all, I'm pretty proud of all of you guys for the kids I see in this church. You need to be very prayerful and you need to be seeking the Lord. But if you think you're going to club Jesus into that kid, ain't going to happen. Probably going to make some wrong decisions. But if you're living Christ out and they see Christ in you, they'll come home. Pray there's not too many scars. Amen? Stand.